Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are and wherever you are listening and whenever you are listening to this call. This is, let's see what date it is. It is August 8th, 2011, Monday. And we are coming to you through BBS Radio. It's a simulcast, the Winfrey Show. The simulcast is coming to you partly through BBS Radio and partly through people who have called in to the conference call line. Wynn is out rounding up all the people on the conference line and is going to be coming in just a minute. My name is Terry Brown, and I'm the co-host of the show, and Wynn decides the topics. The calls are actually archived on BBS Radio, and one can join their archive subscription, and they can go in and listen to all the calls. We've done calls since 2007, I believe. So they are all available to be listened to on the audios on BBS Radio. We do make transcripts of the calls, and Connie does the transcript, and then these are sent out to people. There are three calls a week. Sunday, we do a grid healing. Monday, we do BBS Radio. And Wednesday, we do a question and answer call. And we are in the process of making transcripts of these calls. And the audios are all archived, and the transcripts are going up as we finish them. So, it's Monday night, and I understand
you're doing a good job.
Yes. Oh, well, everybody, welcome to Winfrey.
Yeah, it used to be that if you put a microphone, did you ever see someone's face freeze? This look of panic cross their eyes.
The whole body freezes.
Fear goes through their heart, and they think of all
running
the
away.
Things from past lifetimes. So, you know what? If you've never believed in miracles, the fact that Terry is getting on the line and introducing people by herself, I think that qualifies. Would that qualify?
I think so. Yes.
Mm. Well, do you know what? I think the people that are paying attention to our work for a period of time, not just, you know, listening in, expecting to get wowed and overwhelmed, but when they listen for a while, it's kind of awesome what happens, because we're not doing it. We're like here, and I'm not going to say anything, because I'm going to get the conference line on if anyone's on there, and we'll bring them into this call. Okay, so Terry, I turn it back to you to continue your miracle, and I'll be back in just a moment. Okay.
Thank you, Wynn. I understand that reality is starting to hit the financial scene in the stock market, reflected in the stock market the last few days, and reflected in the price of gold. And it has been predicted by a number of people.
Thank you for going. BBS Radio.
Hey, that's my mistake. I called the wrong number.
Sorry.
So I know in one of the last calls, the Elohim and Ra, which I channel Ra on, an entity called Ra on, was asking people to consider purchasing food. Even if nothing happened, it's good to have a supply of food in the house that one can turn over. It makes for a more stable, but they call them staples, foods. It makes for a more stable household when you have a little bit of a backup there. So the question is, more battening down the hatches and how one can batten down the hatches in the light of the changing supply of money. It's not only affecting America, but it is affecting Europe and other parts of the world. So we will continue our three conference calls a week, and the Elohim, I channel the Elohim and the Ra group. It's called Ra On, and the way it came about was Wynn and I originally it was Daphne that started channeling, and she began bringing through the Elohim group, and then we were asking questions. I picked up on, after Daphne left, I picked up and I started doing channeling. And the group that came through was the Elohim. And Wynn was asking questions of the Elohim about the Ra group. And then the Ra group started to answer, and he started asking questions of the Ra group about the Elohim group, and the Elohim group were saying, no, that's not right, and they were clarifying things. And this was all on tape. And then one day we were doing something called Fire the Grid, and where it was 4 a.m, and it was an international conference call, where we were working with the grids of the world. And I was to do a channeling on Fire the Grid. And I was very nervous, and I didn't have a clue what they were going to say. So I kept asking them, you know, what are you going to talk about? And when they think something, I can't pick it up. Like sometimes when humans think something, you know, that I can pick up the thought form, but with them, I can't pick up what they're thinking. But what they said was, well, we're going to make a big announcement. And I said, well, what is your big announcement? Tell me a little bit about it, something about it. And they said, no, we're going to wait until we're on the air. And so when we came on the air, they made the announcement that for the purposes of working with our group, they were combining elements of the Elohim group with elements of the Ra group, wherein they would have a wider range of frequencies, a broader band available to people, and would be easier for people to contact and easier for people to get in touch with. It would leave a bigger footprint, so to speak. The Elohim is at a very, very high frequency. And one, in order to see their frequency and to get the biggest impact out of connection and contact with them, one needs to be at that very high frequency, which individuals tend not to go to. So that's one of the reasons why it's been so hard for them to to connect with human beings. And when I first started channeling, I got that individuals were praying and praying so much. And in fact, some groups were praying so well that this whole column of light extended up from their crown chakra. However, the individuals did not know that they had connected and were being heard. And one of the biggest things Elohim wanted people to know is that their prayers are being heard. So it sounds like we're back.
We're back, and we have everyone on the conference line on the call. And, you know, we've been doing this now for, how long have we been doing it? Actually, it feels like... Oh, thank you. Oh, let's start the recording. Just a moment.
I think it's since about 2007.
Hang on.
It should be about
Please enter your PIN, followed by pound.
Hang on, I'm starting the recording.
Please wait. This conference is being recorded.
This is August 8th, 2011, and this is our Monday night conference call. And, boy, we were listening to your introduction, Terry, and you sound great. God. In any case, the strange thing about these calls, I say it's strange, but those are the people that are coming on the calls regularly start to take it for granted. Maybe not take it for granted in a casual way, but they experience it. And it's so unusual that when somebody's listening for the first time, it's like they can feel like an outsider. You're not an outsider, but the reason is because if we have it correct, and maybe we're making a mistake, maybe we're just a bunch of mass hypnotized numbskulls, and this is not the explanation, although if you listen long enough to the calls, you'll start seeing that it would be hard to dismiss it by calling us hypnotized. Too much phenomena, too many amazing things happen on this call. But if we are doing what it seems like we're doing, we have a bunch of people in physical bodies, and we have a whole bunch of beings that are not in bodies that are on this call with us, and that there is these bridges between communication. Now, Terry is channeling, so she is a voice for them in the non-physical bodies. And many times there's things that come through Terry that are unusual, that are phenomena that she can't know, that's smarter than her, smarter than me. And awarenesses of how things work that are incredibly insightful. And yet, no one else that I've been exposed to has ever said it before. But the really unusual thing is that this intelligence, these beings in non-physical realms, have the ability to blend with us. Or maybe we have the ability to blend with them. I don't know. It doesn't matter which way it looks like. Because in the course of these calls, there's energies that come in that many people feel. And so it's kind of like we're doing this call, and we have this whole team in other dimensions on the call with us, and they really like to connect with people down here. It's what they say is it's a rare opportunity, event, phenomena, to make that connection with them. And not only does it feel good, not only does it feel healing, it is healing. Because when you make the connection, they can then move through the energy of your body and things can shift in your body. Like a depression can lift or a healing can occur. And we do have many, many times people call us or email me and tell me that occurred for them. So we have this energy on the call and we have access to incredible information about how things work, how they work, and to a certain degree, what the future holds in store. And I got at least one email today from somebody that said they weren't going to listen to the call because they thought it was going to be fear-based, because the subject line was how to handle the economy that seems to be falling apart. And I suppose that's only fear-based if you're afraid of that. And it's, of course, it is easy to be afraid of that because part of us is surviving in this realm. And having no economy or having no money means struggle. And it could be worse. It could mean starving to death, I guess, in a very worst-case scenario, which is not very pleasant. Does it help to make pretend that's not going to happen? I don't think so. I think that there's a saying that goes, hope for the best and prepare for the worst. And this thing about an economic breakdown has been in the works in my material, even going back to the David Wilcock, Edgar Cayce book, where in the year 2000-2001, they were saying that things were going to break down to this in this realm to the point where people had to barter with each other. What does that mean? That means there's no money, that people are bartering services or goods that they have accessible for other services and goods that people have. And they're not relying on a system of money. So that was back in 2000, and it's been quite some time. And I think that to a certain extent, some of the good energy on the planet has been delaying things, and it may still delay things. It may delay things, you know, for quite some time. But according to the information from my sources, we're on the verge of something. And then I read today, let's just say for the past month, they're saying, look at the middle of August. Look at the middle of August for both Aspy and Terry. And today, the stock market dropped 600 or so points. I think it said the biggest drop in 112 years. And that Wall Street was going into a frenzy. Well, you know, the fact that this is falling apart is not just random. In particular, in our country, we have a policy of printing money when we need it and not worrying if there's any gold or silver or anything to back it up. And I don't know exactly how all this works, but I know it happens. And when you keep printing money and you're trading with foreign countries and they're not printing money, that on some level their money has some kind of backbone to it, eventually they're not going to want to take your money because your money is just pieces of paper coming off a printing press. And when they stop taking your money, that means that your economy starts to go into bad shape because you're depending on the trade with foreign country. Or maybe they take your money but they deal with it in an inflationary way. So $2 is $4, et cetera, or it takes twice as much money to pay the same bill. I am not an economic expert, nor do I want to be. But I do know that there is one set of probabilities that's fairly high that we're going to go through a crisis. Now, our country has gone through crises before, and probably no one's old enough, but many of you have read about the big crash of 1929. And if you go study that, you would find that when there was no money, the government put people to work. They had people cleaning cities. They had people building things. They found things that need to be done. Maybe it was busy work on one hand, but it kept people with a paycheck. Now, our government can print money, trillions of dollars, so that we can go to war in the Middle East. Would they print money? They can print money to bail banks out, billions of dollars all over the place. And they've done that. Would they print money to put people to work? You know, there's one thought that there are factions in our government that would like things to break down, that would like people to die or suffer, and that if you recall New Orleans when Hurricane Katrina hit, if you had read the newspaper at that time, our government was acting in a way that was fairly illogical to me, because there were people who were trapped there. And there were people going in and out that could have gone in and out. There were people that wanted to go in boats or go collect somebody, and they were locked. And that there was this period of time for so many days that people were trapped and no one was rescuing them. No one seemed to be delivering food in mass. Do you remember that? It was very unusual because it was in the paper. And I asked myself, why is that occurring like that? Why is our government not taking care of people? And then, of course, you start reading an alternative news, and you find things like chemtrails with funny things in them that when people... some people may not know what chemtrails are. In almost every city and across the country, there are clouds, looks like jet trails, but they're not. They stay far longer. And in fact, sometimes there's airplanes, a couple airplanes in the sky just crisscrossing, laying down these tracks of all these clouds, and they're called chemtrails, and no one knows why they're doing it. It's never been announced by our government, and you can go look it up, chemtrails, C-H-E-M-T-R-A-I-L-S, and you'll find many, many, many websites talking about it. Some of them where people are collecting particles and finding very toxic substances in these things. Some of the times people are saying when there was a whole bunch of chemtrails, there was also an outbreak of certain diseases. So why is our government doing that all over the country and even over the world? Maybe there's a reason that's good about it, but they're not telling us. And
it's probably a very costly program.
Costly program. Of course it is. And then if you start paying attention to it, you find out that oftentimes when a certain dignitary comes into town, the chemtrails stop. We've watched that pattern, right, quite consistently. So it seems as if that there's a protection for those dignitaries and that they don't want them to be exposed to these chemtrails. And so there's many, many things when you start looking at it that in the past we all thought, even me, that somewhere someone cared. And if things were going bad, someone would fix it. There'd be a daddy. The government would be a daddy. And, of course, if they're truly benevolent, they would do that. They would do whatever they can. And the question is, are they benevolent? And do they really care? And what is the agenda for that? Well, you know what? That's a whole topic which you can go listen to Alex Jones. You can read David Icke. You can do searches on the Internet. You know, anyone who's ever studied 911, there's something fishy about it. Go look up 911 conspiracy. Read it yourself. There's too many things going on. So if we have an economic crisis, what's the potentials for that? You know, in Utah, Mormons have been told, and it's carried down for a long time, to have a few years of food supply in their basement. They're also, somebody told me, they're also minting their own gold bullion, starting an alternative currency. And other places are doing this, okay? So if you're thinking everything is going to be okay, I hope you're right. And if things are not going to be okay, it's far better to start making plans right now on how you're going to cope. Now, of course, one way of coping, one thought which readily comes to mind, is just buy a bunch of gold and silver and put it in your basement. Now, the chances are you don't have enough money to do that. Very few people do. And if you did, and you did that, now you can't tell anybody about it because you can't trust anybody because they will come in if they're having a hard time and steal what you have. So you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And we asked in a channeling one time, somebody asked the question, is this a good time to buy gold and silver? And the answer was, on one hand, it is. But on the other hand, it could easily set you up as a target that you have what other people don't have. And they said, in that channeling, the best security is community, good, really good friends, people that care about each other, that can turn to each other. If shit happens and can group think their way into out of problems, even if it's required to leave an area. Do you want to be all alone and not know anybody? And it's far harder to find people at that point than it is prior to that point. You know, people say, well, this can't happen. If we look at the history of our planet, if we look at the history of our solar system, which we know a little bit of, there's been terrible travesties that have happened. And inhumanities of man to man. And I don't believe when they were happening, no one knew, believed it would happen. I don't believe the Jews in Germany believed that they were going to be massacred. I mean, I've read that there were even people saying this was so, and they didn't leave. They had the opportunity to leave, and they didn't leave. There was a planet called Maldek, which exploded and became asteroids. When Maldek exploded, according to Carla Ruckert's raw material, not a single soul escaped. When I say soul escaped, obviously everyone died. But every soul on the planet, or almost everyone, let me just say, I can't validate this, but let's just say it might be true. They became a tangled mess, tangled up with each other. And according to the Carla Ruckert channelings, they were moved to our planet and came in as Neanderthal man, which was engineered by the Ra group. And that was finally individuating themselves slowly but surely over maybe hundreds of thousands of years. Now, hundreds of thousands of years sounds like a long time, but not by our sources' standards, because they're not in time. They can create long-term agendas and pull them off because they're not in this realm. So we had an interesting question come up, I don't know if it was last Wednesday or Sunday, about karma and how one little wrong turn, one wrong turn can lead to thousands of years of lifetimes working that out. And so you can be Pollyanna, and then you can look and say, if things, these things happened, this could be a treacherous realm. And does it help you not to say that? I mean, is that a pessimistic attitude? No, maybe it's a realistic attitude. So what can you do? You know, one of the things we know is that consciousness changes reality. And that if enough people have a positive consciousness and can hold the space, things take different turns because we're creating what happens. Well, if you look at our little group, you know, and if this is a group that is tapping into that, then you look at the size of it. You look at how hard it is to tell anybody about it and how little support it gets. And if this is one of those groups that can provoke change, then you have to ask yourself, why is it this way? Is everyone going to run to this group when they're starving and surviving, when survival is at stake? It's far harder to welcome people when they're desperate. Far harder. It's like, this is the time to create associations. This is the time to make spiritual friends. This is the time to connect with people in your city. It's not easy. You don't have to be creative and clever to figure out how to do it and how to connect with the right people. Not just anybody, but the right people. People with high intentions, people that are loving, and people that want spiritual community with other people. And one of the things that's not a bad idea, and I said this before, is to buy food. You know, almost every town has a 99-cent store. So for $100, you can get 100 cans of spaghetti. and probably keep you going for 100 days. And I would guess that if things really and truly break down, then people are going to be trying to figure out how to get themselves out of it. And people are going to have a natural tendency to try to take care of each other. And so having some canned food gives you some breathing room. And also water. Water doesn't cost any money. Even though tap water isn't that great, just getting 50 gallons and store it somewhere and a little iodine to purify it means you'll have water on tap. And if you're going to do this, if I was going to do this, I would say, tell my neighbors, let's do this together. Let's all get some cans of food. Just a good idea. That way, you'll have a bunch of neighbors that have cans of food and feel a lot better. You'll have friends that you're not afraid to talk to if it gets to the point where people are eating that. And you know what? Even if it never gets to that point, the fact that you did it starts to create community, starts to create care, it starts to create connection. So it doesn't matter whether you need it or not. You're not doing it out of fear. You carry automobile insurance? You have to do that. But you carry medical insurance. You don't do it because you expect to use it. You do it just in case. So the things I'm saying can be looked upon as insurance. Insurance so that if something happens, you're prepared. If you live in a really big, congested city, do you know somebody outside of the city that lives in a small town or in the country? Cultivate the friendship. Ask them if anything goes really screwy, if you can come over there. Maybe you'll have to sleep in your car. You know what? But, you know, you just preparing those things doesn't mean you're afraid. It actually can make you less afraid because you know you have options. But it's good to set your options up now, not later. We have team shift where people get and do calls every day and get to talk to each other and call in the light. Are you in team shift? You get in team shift and you'll get to know four or five people all over the country that have a high intent. So if there's an emergency, somebody has to leave a city, you have friends that you've been making in other cities. And again, it's far better to set these foundations up now when you're not afraid, when you're not up against the wall, than when you are, because people will trust it far better if you do it now. Now, on that note, we have our sources with us, Drew Terry, and I thought I'd get their take on some of this. And, I tell you, we did do a conversation through Daphne a couple of days ago, and they said, based on their probability vortices, this could be imminent. They said it didn't mean it had to be. It didn't mean it couldn't be delayed. But the thing is, even if it's delayed, it's still going to happen. I mean, I don't see a way for it not to happen, whether it's sooner or later. Maybe it can be put off for years, and I hope so. But maybe it can't. And the stock market took its biggest plunge today in 112 years. So that's pretty big. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person on this call. And any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the planetary systems, through the energy fields of the Earth, through us, through our bodies, through all our chakras, through our feet, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection, a blending of our energies, while inviting those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us. And we create a protected space that only the positive has access to, and anything out of that nature must leave now.
We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. This is brought on August 8, 2011, planet Earth. Earth is poised. Many countries are poised on a fulcrum point that could go either way. Right now, what is needed are individuals in the planet who are secure. Security does not mean money. Individuals who are secure in their own beingness. It means being grounded. It means being centered. One of the ways one can center is to see themselves in the flow of energy from the center of the universe to the center of the earth. That they are within that space and are centered, and that economic situations are not senior to things like being centered. Knowing one is worthwhile. One is valued, which we value you. In spite of not having any gold, in spite of not having much of anything within the physical realm, one is still valued. One can still be grounded. Do you have questions?
Yes, I just want to ask some questions on behalf of all those people that feel that sense of anxiety, that feel that concern for their families, for their children, for their relatives, for their friends. How can we visualize the highest possible outcome and be on the verge of these potential breakdowns at the same time? What can a person do in concrete action to help them move along?
The first thing is to be centered and have a sense of self-worth that is not connected to the economic system. For you came in without money, and you leave without money. During the time of your travels in the third density, you need shelter and food on community, which helps foster growth. However, you are not a child of the third dimension. You are a child of the universe. And your role on Earth is one of attaining growth, one of obtaining community. As community leads to the most growth, where one is communicating with a group of people that they can give and take and have affinity and community with. When one loses that, which very often people can lose that in the pursuit of money and material wealth, then their growth is lessened. They lose sight of who they really are. So to start with, to gain sight of the centering of who you really are and that you are worthwhile and that you are valued, then to reach out to the people around you that you trust and would care for, to set up groups as within Team Shift, groups are being set up of support where one person can support another. And in the calling in of the light, we come in and also can support individuals within the group and help them be centered within their own life. To set up community, to set up individuals that one can give and take with, meetings, community meetings, get to know your neighbors. This can be very helpful, and ultimately could be a framework for rebuilding as individuals, as they get to know one another, get to know what each needs, what their material needs are, and how they can help, what jobs they might do to be of service to another. This can all help.
You know, you see in some cities, even in New York City, where neighbors are getting together and doing community gardens on public land that wasn't used for anything, or, you know, maybe it was going to be built on, but no one ever built on it. And, it, you know, it's a small gesture, but it's a big gesture because it gets people in a neighborhood working together. I would say that, you know, there's going to be a lot of room for leadership in the days to come. And leadership being able to, for example, obviously you're anxious about the economy. We are all anxious about the economy. You know what? It cannot be solved individually. I mean, let's just suppose you tried to solve it individually, and you took loads of money, and you what an island. I guess you could do it that way. You can go to the island. No one could get there. And you'll grow food for the rest of your life. And that's going to be your life from that point. Most of us don't have that option. Not even close. But if you start being a voice of people's needs, like in the course of your day, keep it in the back of your mind. Think of the people that you really do have affinity with. And call a meeting and go to a local restaurant. Maybe don't do it at your home, because maybe you want to decide who you would let into your home and who you wouldn't. But go into a local restaurant, go into have a meeting room, have everyone have dinner, and just have people talk about their concerns. Just be the facilitator and let each people say, let them know that if things get into trouble, you want to have a group of people that connect with each other that can help resolve it. And, you know, if you can hold the space of the spiritual space, even though you're dealing with something that's physical, you don't have to go into all the spiritual stuff. They don't have to know about dimensional shifts and Ra and the Elohim at that point. Just extend your loving to them. Knowing about all this stuff, you know, here's a good question. I'm going to pose this question. You know, there are many people who become students of the shift. They listen to every spiritual person. They are knowledgeable metaphysically. What's the connection between having all that knowledge and actually qualifying for graduating this realm?
Thank you. One can have knowledge, but knowledge is not useful unless it is able to be felt, sensed, experienced, and put into effect. So one might try, when one gets some knowledge, of thinking how one can put that into an experiential thing in their life. Because without the experience, the knowledge is dead.
You know, another really good idea right now is to start going and supporting farmers' markets in your area. And get to know the people that sell there. Those people have farms. They grow things. And number one, usually at farmers' markets, there's great opportunities to meet other people. People that tend to go to farmers' markets tend to be open, more open than other people. I can say that because I've gone to farmers markets. And it's a great environment to meet people in your local area and to meet farmers and to start supporting farmers by buying from them and to get to know where their farms are. And, you know, because at some point, personal connection with those people may not be possible. But If you're their customer right now, then it's a great opportunity to make those connections. You know, one thing that I've done when I wanted to open my energies up, and keep in mind there were periods of time when I used to hitchhike around the country, and this can work anywhere. That is, go to a restaurant. But don't go to a busy restaurant. Go to a restaurant where the owner is really going to appreciate your patronage, where no one's there. Now, you have to pick your restaurant carefully because you want gratitude. You don't want his desperateness rolling all over to you, trying to convince you that you need the most expensive dessert. That won't work. But oftentimes, a restaurant owner who is not having enough business will have a huge amount of gratitude for someone that eats there. And if you eat there a couple, three times, get to know the waitress, you're suddenly flowing energy. See, this is all about flowing energy. It's about all about expanding your matrix. And you need to do something. You need to take action. And you need to be of service. And just going to a restaurant is a great way of getting your energy moving. And another thing is, when your energy is moving, you'll note that there are periods of time when you're really depressed and you're really withdrawn. And there's other times when you're really open. Start paying attention to the open times. Because when you're open is the opportunity to connect and meet new people, not when you're depressed and woe is me. And what it is there's all these flows that each of us is doing. We've got all these little spinning flows. One of them is depressed. One of them is withdrawn. One of them is lonely. One of them is broke. And another one is joyous. And another one is open. And they're all moving at different prominences in your consciousness. Learn to recognize them so that you can pay attention to your own flows and take action when the flow is right. In other words, when you're having a terribly depressed day, is not the day to go looking for a job, probably. Could be, I mean, you could switch your day around, so there's no rules about this. But on a day that you're feeling a little bit uplifted, that is a good time to look for a job. Of course, you're probably thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to go look for a job. I'm feeling good today, and now I'm going to get rejected all day. And at the end of the day, I'm going to be depressed. But don't think that. And, you know, it was interesting. Jerry and I had the TV on the other night, and we were watching Susie Orman. And she took this guy out of the audience, and he was having troubles because he had $100,000 in student loans, and there's no way he could dismiss them. He didn't know how to pay them. And, you know, I know he got a job, but he was only earning $20,000-$25,000 a year or something. And he felt like he was lucky to have a job. And she called him up and she said, he was there on stage and she made him, you know, kind of a showcase because she said, can you feel that they were lucky to have you? What would it take for you to feel that they were lucky to give you that job? And can you feel that? Can you offer enough to someone else that you can say, they're lucky to have me in their life? Maybe, not that they don't deserve you, because they deserve you, but that you're not lucky because of it, because you're making such a big contribution to them, and you know it, and your self-worth goes up. You know, when you have a job, there's little things you can do to invoke grace. A job is something which is an exchange. It's an area of obligation. I work 8 hours, I get $8 an hour. At the end of the day, I get $64. And so you did your 8 hours and you got your $64. Now, you may be making a lawyer making $200 an hour, but it doesn't matter. It's an exchange. Find the genuine ways to do something extra. And not to kiss somebody's ass, but just to do it. And sooner or later, someone's going to notice you. And number one, when you get noticed, you're going to have job security. And number two, you might get promoted. And number three, you might get a better job. It's kind of like if somebody's working as a supermarket cashier and they just think they're too good for that job. They should be doing this. They should be doing that. Chances are they're going to be stuck there for a long time. Now, how about if they're a cashier and they're so cheery and they smile at every customer that walks by and make them feel good? And they take they're a wanderer. Their job is to cheer people up, and they're in the perfect position. People come to them all day, and that's what makes their day go faster, because they're going to cheer everyone up that comes through that line. And before you know it, somebody comes through the line that has a company and says, man, I love this person around my company. Look how cheery they are. And before you know it, they got promoted. They got a good job. You know, many companies work. There's certain jobs that are totally skill-based. If you, you know, learn the skill, you can then get a job. But there's a whole bunch of other jobs that are trust-based. And if you can put off enough good energy so people trust you, like I remember when I was in high school, some of you, I told that story in downtown Philadelphia. I was fairly young. I think I was 15 years old. And for whatever reason, these guys had this electronics store called Soundtronics, and I had the key to the store. I was there alone. I would take money, and they never even had a thought that I was going to steal from them. So if you can develop that kind of impeccableness, those kinds of people are harder to find oftentimes than people with skills. I mean, how many people have you heard about that went into business and their partner emptied all their bank accounts out and left the country? Trust is such a great quality to build, to be impeccable in your relationships with people. There's something that happens from that. You become worthy when you're impeccable. You put out worthiness and people get it. Your words aren't slanted. You know you're going to live up to what you say. You know you're not going to cut corners. And these are qualities that will bring you into spheres of people that you want to know. And start now. It could be life and death in the next months or years. The quality of worthiness, integrity, trust. And you know, it's hardest to be in that space when things are tough and when you're desperate. It's a lot easier to make concessions. I'm not saying to judge yourself if you do, because it's not easy. You can be. What if you're in the place where you don't have any money and you steal a loaf of bread so your children could eat? Well, believe me, I would be the first to forgive you, and I would suggest you can be the first to forgive yourself if it ever came to that. But do your very best to develop a track record of integrity, of keeping your word, being impeccable about your word. Prove to yourself that you can do it, and it will change the energies you put out to other people. And you will be able to assume responsibilities, and that will create long-term security. And for each person, it's going to be different. But let me ask our sources. What is the connection between integrity and connection to the higher realms, trustworthiness and connection to the higher realms? Seems to me it would be hard for a person who is devious to energetically connect. Could you share why that's so?
Yes. When an individual is in the higher realms, particularly, things move very, very fast. And the reach that a person makes is determined by the person's own trust in himself, his own belief that the reach is going to be received. And if the person has been devious, then automatically doubt comes in whether he is worthy of a good receipt from the other person, a good flow back from the other person. He may project upon the other person thoughts of, as he has been devious, that they are probably devious. And as you are in the higher realms and are moving at a very fast speed, there is clarity of intent and purpose. There is more viewing of how things really are with the other person. If a person has been devious, that means that they have likely hidden their deviousness. And as they get into the higher realms and they attempt to communicate, they are unable to hide their deviousness. And the flow between the two people is automatically corrupted. It makes it very hard if one is devious or is unethical to interact and give and take at the speeds that are required at the higher realm and at the crystal clear clarity that there is of thought between individuals at the higher realms. Therefore, individuals who are devious and criminal rarely make it to the higher realms.
Thank you. You know what? I think we're 7:03, so let's just take a moment of centering before we end the call with our sources. Let's just ask them to work with us. Some of you know how this feels. You can feel their energy, our energy, coming into our space. Shut your eyes and some of you may notice it coming in through your crown chakra. Let's just have a state of connection, communion, and balancing.